You're listening to The Sector, the radio show podcast discussing the role of nonprofits, social justice, and activism. With me, Ethan Clow, your host. Hello, hello. And as always, we are broadcasting right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver on ye old radio dial. Of course, also streaming live at CITR.ca and via podcast whenever, wherever, as technology permits. I only hope that your technology is permitted. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. It's been 2 weeks since our last episode. Of course, we're on a bi-weekly schedule. Just a reminder if you forgot when I told you that last time. But yes, welcome to the show, everybody. It is Friday, November 27th here in, last weekend of November. Coming up next is December. And that means, well, the holiday season formally upon us. Christmas will only be a few weeks away. I hope you are getting your Christmas shopping done in a reasonable time frame. As we all know, it's a very stressful time of year. And for a lot of people, it kind of sneaks up on you. You're going to have to get a bit careful. Make sure you buy your presents. If you're ordering off Amazon or something, make sure you order a bit early. Get them shipped on a timely manner. Remember to order enough that you qualify for the free shipping. You know, what's funny, actually, I was mentioning to some coworkers about this very fact. And we were kind of talking about this earlier in the month. And it kind of dawned on us that, you know, wow, we're really talking about Christmas shopping at a very early stage. And I think I mentioned this a few shows ago about how there's a bit of a kind of a dirty, icky feeling about talking about Christmas before Remembrance Day. You know, there's just, you feel like you're kind of not being, I don't know, sacred or something, that you're just kind of like violating some sort of important social framework that guides society if you're talking about Christmas before Remembrance Day. But Remembrance Day has passed, and now we're into the Christmas season. So lots to talk about in that respect going forward here on The Sector. On today's show, I want to dive into, well, some pretty important issues. Obviously, since the last episode aired, there were those terrible tragedies in Paris and Lebanon and Iraq and, you know, at least a handful other suicide bombings around the world. There's very little that I can say on my show that could offer any kind of reality or explanation for why these horrible things happen. I wish I had that ability, but I honestly don't. And all I can really say, of course, is that everyone here at CITR was devastated when we heard about that. Our only real recourse is to make sure that for those of us who go out there and try to promote social justice and promote activism and tolerance and all those wonderful things, that we redouble our efforts and we do our very best to reach people and hopefully influence them and make them see things from a bit more of a tolerant, accepting way. There really is no other approach, I think, that works. You can't beat somebody into a state of acceptance. You have to educate them, and you have to a certain extent, you have to extend your kindness and your mercy, even when you don't want to. And that can often do so much more than, you know, a stick can do in terms of fixing problems. But again, there have been conflicts like this since the beginning of time, and they will continue to be so, most likely. The only thing we can do, again, press on, do what we can to make sure that we're creating our own bubble of kindness and tolerance around us, and hopefully try to influence the world in the best possible way. Speaking of influencing the world, though, there's been a lot of conversation recently, especially with the recent terrorist attacks, on the question of refugees. And this notion of refugees coming into Canada, under the Trudeau Liberals, were pledged to bring in quite a few, 25,000 to 30,000. A lot of people are upset, concerned. There's actually been a number of media reports talking about how this issue has reached a kind of fervor on social media. People like unfriending longtime friends on Facebook over these arguments. And that's, I mean, you know, is there a right way to handle that situation? I don't know. I'd be very curious to hear everyone else's feedback on that, of course. And if you want to write in or comment on Facebook or Twitter, you can do so, sectorpodcast@gmail.com, as well as you can find me on Twitter at Ethan Clow and facebook.com/sectorpodcast. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. You know, have you unfriended someone recently? What was the conversation like? And what motivated you to take that you know, potentially drastic step? But anyway, aside from kind of the media conversation about the conversation itself, there has been a lot of misinformation floating around. And I wanted to take some time on this show and address some of the myths around refugees coming into Canada. Obviously, you shouldn't be too surprised on what side of the fence I'm on. When it comes to this issue, I think that we have a humanitarian responsibility to offer aid to these people. And indeed, I think that there's a lot that they can bring to Canada that we would be wealthier for to have them here. So I wanted to kind of address some of these concerns that I've seen floating up on social media and hopefully provide a bit of enlightenment. And again, you know, I will link in our show notes online where you can find more detailed information. And again, you can use this when you're talking to friends, family. And if this issue comes up, you can maybe have some facts to back up your positions. Anyway, so lots to look forward to on today's show. We're also going to dive into some nonprofit charity stuff as well. In the meantime, though, let's take just a quick break here on the show. We'll play some station IDs. Those are always fun. And we'll come back right after this. Stay tuned.
This is Ben from Greymaker.
This is Sasha Bullock.
Howdy, folks. We're the Bitter Weed Drawn.
This is Zach from Black Breath.
Hi, this is Audie from Broken Bones.
Hello, Vancouver. This is Carolyn Mark.
I'm Water Crime Guide.
This is Dan Mangan.
Hey, this is David Pepke from Denmark.
This is Dylan Osick from Slingshot.
Hi, this is Dick Valentine from Electric Six.
Hi, everybody. This is Fred Penner on the Radio Waves.
This is Fred Schneider.
This is Colin from GBH.
Hi, this is the Gearing Up Inventors.
Hi, this is Bette Ditto from The Gossip.
Hi, this is Brian from Hellshock.
This is Scruffmouth the Scribe.
I'm Shani from NFC.
This is Sab Gray from Iron Cross.
Hey, we're J plus J plus J.
This is Jack Mercer from Jack Mercer and the Whiskey Bandits.
It's James Wood, half of Mega Bear.
This is Jerron Paxton, American musicianer.
This is Swami Bill and the Shameless Weed Hounds from New Orleans, Louisiana, east of the Mississippi.
Hi, this is John Boutte from New Orleans, Louisiana.
This is Jesse Laborde.
I'm Peter Mansbridge.
Hi, this is Ron McLean of Hockey/Movie Night in Canada.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, also on the web, CITR.ca, in UBC, University of British Columbia, in Vancouver, Canada. Have our people contact your people, won't you?
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts on Commercial Drive and other areas at
Bill and Rattle Music Limited, High Life Records, People's Co-op Bookstore, Audio Pile Records, Bad Bird Media, Band Merch Canada, Vancouver Music Gallery, and Pandora's Box Rehearsal Studios.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to CITR.ca.
And we're back here on The Sector with me, Ethan Clow, talking about nonprofits, social justice, and activism. Now, before we get on to talking a bit about the refugee situation here in Canada, I wanted to dive into a bit of sort of charity-related discussion. Now, for those of you who don't know, coming up on December 1st of 2015 is Giving Tuesday. Now, you might say, that sounds kind of familiar, because I think I talked about it last year. But Giving Tuesday is actually really important. It was sort of this kind of makeshift holiday that was invented to benefit charities and nonprofits and kind of giving back to the community. And it's come about in sort of response to a lot of the, what some would characterize as the excessive amount of shopping and spending that goes on during the holiday season. You know, we talk about Cyber Monday and Black Friday and all of these big days when you spend money, you know, normally on other people, of course, but sometimes on yourself, and you buy these big, big expensive things. You go out and you buy a new TV or a pile of DVDs or a new car or computers, and, you know, you go on Amazon and you rack up these huge bills of like $500, $800, $1,000 because things are on sale and you want to get the best possible deal. And with all this money exchanging and all this buying of expensive newfangled things, sometimes charities in the nonprofit world kind of get left in the dust. And it's really important to remember that this is a very important time for nonprofits and charities. Usually around the holidays is when they make the bulk of their budget for the next year. This is how they basically, you know, make ends meet, is holiday giving. And they depend very much on people, for the most part, kind of feeling a bit guilty about all this spending and throwing a few bucks their way. Now, right or wrong, that's up for debate. But what's interesting about Giving Tuesday is it's a very positive message, and it's designed to encourage you to think, you know, I'm spending all of this money online, I'm spending all of this money on myself or my family. Do we really need, you know, another edition of Star Wars on Blu-ray? Or could that money maybe go to a better cause? And again, not to necessarily say that we should be, you know, shaming people into giving to charity, but at the same token, a lot of money is going into what could be characterized as excessive spending. And if we could redirect just a little bit of it into charity and into helping others, well, the results could be absolutely amazing. If we just spend a bit more money on helping others instead of helping ourselves, well, I mean, we've talked about sort of the kick-on effect of charity and what it can mean for society if we look after each other just a bit more. You know, there's a lot of wonderful things that could happen. With Giving Tuesday, there are a lot of neat things that you can do. So if you go to givingtuesday.ca, you can find a really nice landing page, and it's got all kinds of options for you to get involved. So for instance, simply giving to a charity is a really great way to do that. And you may have noticed that a lot of your favorite charities are really putting out a lot of marketing effort to remind people that Giving Tuesday is coming up. So you may have noticed that like certain charities are changing their Facebook banners, are sending out fairly frequent reminders via email or social media. And it's important to keep them in mind for your charitable giving. I mean, if you can afford to give to more than one, fantastic. But if not, you know, really kind of think about where can my gift go and have the best impact. And that's a discussion you're going to want to have amongst yourselves and amongst the charities that you support. But again, don't begrudge these charities for making an effort to make themselves visible, because this is a really important day. Now, additionally, on givingtuesday.ca, you can do a lot of other neat stuff. You can fundraise for charities themselves. So, for instance, if your charity of choice has opportunities for, say, accepting a donation from like a fundraising event, a party, or a get-together, or a race, or, you know, one of those types of events, again, it's a really fantastic way to help them out and kind of maximize giving. There's also a great feature for finding a volunteer match. You know, not everybody can give cash this time of year, but you can, you know, chip in some elbow grease, some of that muscle. I don't have muscle, but whatever. The point being is you can track down an organization that's nearby that fits your values and which you can lend a helping hand to. So they actually have this system for trying to track down a charity that you think would be a good fit for you, which is really handy. So if you know, if you ever wanted to volunteer but maybe don't know where to begin and it's a bit overwhelming, here's a great way to just kind of get your feet wet and, you know, make a commitment that's not a huge in-depth, you know, permanent volunteer position, but something you can do for maybe a week or two. You know, just find a good match for yourself. One of the other really cool ideas that GivingTuesday.ca can help you with is giving a charity gift card. And so what this is like any other gift card, you put a dollar amount on the card, and you can print it out or get your own copy or whatever how you want to do it. Give it to a friend, and say you put $100 on the gift card. They then have this gift card, which they can donate that money to any charity they want. And it's a really cool way to give a gift that is very generous and it's very thoughtful, but it also, you know, pays it forward a little bit, because you're encouraging someone else to go, $100, who can I give this to? something that I'm really keen on and that I will feel really good about after I give it to them. So it's a really great way of kind of passing on that goodwill. And, it, you know, things like this that I think we should invest more in as promoters of the charity world. It's something that I think is really cool anyway. So Giving Tuesday, fantastic resource. Again, givingtuesday.ca is the place you want to check out. And of course, if you see any of your local charities that you're, you know, liking on Facebook or following on Twitter that are posting about Giving Tuesday, give them a retweet or a favorite or a like or a share. It actually really does help them out. As somebody who kind of works behind the scenes on these things, getting some shares and some likes on Facebook, it really does actually make you feel pretty good about what you do. And it does actually help the charity get more of a presence, which, you know, down the road means more fundraising and more gifts and more service. So it's a really fantastic thing to do. Anyway, let's take a quick break here on The Sector. We will return after this.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
Sector Podcast with me, Ethan Clow, broadcasting on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. So, everybody, on today's show, talking a bit about the refugee crisis and what's happening here in Canada. So I wanted to talk about this for a number of different reasons here on the show, mainly because obviously this touches base on a lot of social justice concerns, and that's part of the, you know, mandate of our show is to dive into these topics. But also because I've noticed that as this conversation is getting more and more mainstream, there's been a lot of misinformation presented out there, and I kind of wanted to, so much for my own sake, just do a bit of research and put some positive information out there that hopefully will help people make, you know, kind of some rational decisions. One of the things that I have taken a bit of heart at is that a lot of the conversation that I've seen has done a fairly good job of getting across the importance of being on the right side of history with this one. And that, I think, is something that perhaps we can underestimate the importance of. When we talk about the idea of denying people entry into Canada, desperate people who have no other options, and people who are fleeing oppression and terror and death and destruction, You know, it's important to remember, if we're saying no to these people, then we need to understand, historically speaking, who are we siding with? Well, we're siding with the people who didn't want to take in Jewish refugees from Europe during World War II. We're siding with the people that said no to Anne Frank. We're siding with the people who allowed ships full of helpless people fleeing the Nazis to sail to port, being denied entry again and again, eventually returning home to Europe to face extermination. If we put ourselves in that corner and start talking about the exceptional quality of Canadian life, the importance of protecting our culture and our identity, if we talk about these terms, then we have to understand where we're standing historically speaking. We are standing on the side of those who stood back and washed their hands of the problems that were going on in the world and said, not my concern, and walked away from some of the worst abuses of human rights and freedom, dignity, and so many other things, walked away and doomed generations of people. So, again, this is no small matter that we're talking about. And I think it's important to remember that when you do get into these conversations with your friends and colleagues and whatnot, that you don't underestimate, there's a pretty big important factor at risk here, and that is the identity of Canada's humanitarian record. You know, we're putting ourselves in the history books right now. In 50 years from now, history will look back on these events, and we're either going to get a failing grade or we're going to get a passing grade. And a failing grade is for Canada to say no to these people and to send them off to who knows where they will face who knows what struggles. Or saying yes, we're going to stand up for human dignity, and we're going to stand up and actually live and walk the values that we express here in Canada, and we will be richer for it. We will be richer having these people here. Diversity will only help Canada. Now, the subject of the impact of diversity within a population has been well documented, and we may talk about that a little bit later if we have time. But right now, again, I think it's really important to address some of the myths, some of the concerns, and some of the made-up facts that are circulating around the sort of refugee crisis that's going on here. And of course, some of this information might get mixed in with American information, which is also ongoing. And again, like depending on time, we may touch on some of that a little bit later as well. The point being, of course, is that here in Canada, our government has made a pledge to bring in a large amount of refugees from Syria. Now, initially, Justin Trudeau said that we would bring in about 25,000 refugees into Canada. Now, recently, as in a couple of days ago, I believe, he sort of provided a bit of a revision to that plan, still taking in 25,000, but pushing the date from end of this year to the end of February of next year. In addition, there are some extra security precautions that they're taking, you know, in light of the situation in Paris. Now, it's important to remember, of course, that the Paris attacks were not committed by refugees fleeing the Syrian conflict. It was committed by the people who are causing the Syrian conflict, who the refugees are running away from. That's a very important distinction to keep in mind. The people that the refugees are running away from are the same terrorists that were fighting as part of international efforts. So these are not the same people. Now, the sort of notion that terrorists could try to filter themselves in through the process is extraordinarily unlikely. And again, there's this notion that these sort of boatloads of people are just going to drift across the Atlantic, land somewhere in Canada, and we're just going to kind of let them off and just put them in a hotel somewhere. And that's sort of how things are going to happen. But that's furthest from the truth as you can possibly get. The security screening on refugees is extremely comprehensive. It's a multi-layered system. So let's start right there with security when it comes to bringing in refugees. How does it actually work? So first of all, let's talk about what Canada has in terms of laws. Canada does not allow refugees into the country if they are potential convicts. So if they've committed a crime, they will not be allowed in as a refugee. So when they are arriving in the country, they go through a front-end security screening. And this has been in place since November of 2001. Through this process, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service checks all refugee claimants on arrival in Canada. Now, it's important to remember that since this has come into place, the number of refugees to be found to have any kind of potential security risk has been statistically insignificant, meaning with all of this screening, they've found smidgens of potential security risks. But that's not the only step. Keep in mind that for a refugee to be even considered a refugee, they have to first go through the United Nations. So there is a whole separate screening process, multi-tiered, that a refugee has to go through to even be considered a refugee in the first place and to be up for consideration to enter a nation's borders. So this isn't simply a question of, you know, somebody crawls onto a boat, they sneak across the ocean, get into Canada and manage to bluff their way through, you know, a security check. No, no. They're like being sifted, like sand being sifted through multiple filters. So again, it's really important to highlight this issue that the number of people who would be considered threats, our chances are that they're going to be weeded out through many of these multiple steps. And if they somehow manage to get all the way up to, you know, Canadian customs, they're still likely to be caught and exposed. It's a very multi-part process. Sure, there could be failures here and there, but you got to remember, there is absolutely no way to be 100% secure in anything that happens. Short of, you know, saran wrapping Canada's borders, we will never, ever have the kind of security that the way that sort of media pundits are demanding for this sort of thing. It's also important to remember that if you were planning on sneaking into Canada for nefarious purposes, posing as a refugee is a terrible plan. Not only do you have to go through these multiple lines of interviews and screenings through the UN and then the country itself, when you do get to Canada, you go through the security checks, which include interviews with CSIS, also the RCMP, which includes things like fingerprinting and face-to-face interviews. So if you were planning to commit a violent terrorist attack, this is a terrible plan because you would never expose yourself to that many checks, interviews, and security points along the way. It's far more likely that terrorist threats will come through visitors, you know, people who are quote visiting Canada on vacation. The refugee process is a very inefficient and ultimately extremely hazardous way for somebody who is a criminal to try to enter another country. It's also important to remember that getting into that process for resettlement as a refugee is not an easy process in of itself. So if you're a refugee and you're in one of these places in Europe and you're trying to get into the program so that you can be resettled in Canada, you're going through the UN. Now, keep in mind that of all the people who are applying through this process, struggling to get to somewhere safe, and the people who are being evaluated as suitable for resettlement, that amount is less than 5% of all the asylum seekers. So keep that in mind, that of the people who are coming to Canada who haven't even gotten into the country yet, they're only less than 5% of the people who are desperately seeking, you know, refuge, which I think should give us pause because, A, that's a shockingly low amount. And B, you know, if you are planning harm, to manage to get through all of those hurdles, it's really difficult to imagine And again, not to suggest that it could never in a million years happen. I'm sure things can happen. But it's also important to recognize that we're about as secure as we could possibly be in this respect. So that's a really important point to keep in mind when talking about the security issues around this idea of refugees coming into Canada. Now, let's talk a bit about some of the economic factors. There's been a lot of misinformation, again, floating around this notion about what refugees will make here in Canada, what they bring in terms of economic factors, and what the government will be giving them in terms of health care and benefits and et cetera, et cetera. So again, and this is a very important point, the misinformation that's out there, you've got to be very careful of what you read, especially on these, like, you know, circling emails and on social media. One such claim is that refugees receive a monthly pension of about $1,890. Now, first of all, this is not true in any way, shape, or form. First of all, there is no monthly pension, period. And it is not $1,890. A refugee may be eligible for about $580 in social aid. That's a big if. Now, if you were to add that up for 12 months, which is, again, $580 a month, you would get about $6,900. Now, to keep that in mind, that does not cover the cost of rent, food, clothing, or transportation. So those are not covered in that amount of money at all. Now, keep in mind that a refugee who is receiving that almost $7,000 is actually $11,461 below the poverty line in Canada. So this notion that refugees are coming in and receiving thousands of dollars from the government, thousands more than, say, someone who worked their whole life and is getting a pension, et cetera, et cetera, it is totally 100% absolutely false. Now, you don't have to believe me. You can go look this up yourself. You can look up on the government website how much refugees get. You can look up how much a pensioner will receive. You can look at the healthcare benefits and add them all up, and you will see these numbers with this inflated notion that refugees are getting rich here in Canada is totally false. Now, you might say, well, if all these refugees are coming in, that means we're still paying a lot more in social services. And it's true, we'll pay a bit more for accepting 25,000 at any given time. But it is important to remember that in 2012, Canada received slightly fewer than 25,000 refugees in total. Now, although that number can fluctuate year to year, 25,000 has been the average for more than 20 years. So keep in mind, Canada has not exactly been bursting at the seams with refugees over the years. We've gotten by taking in a very small amount over, you know, the past two decades. We're not hurting in terms of supporting refugees here in Canada. That's very important to remember. If you think that because we're bringing in 25,000, we're going to be overburdening the system, it's just not true. We have lots of leeway within the system to accommodate this amount of people. In 2011, there was approximately 13% of immigrants who came into Canada were refugees. So that's a very stable number. And again, you know, you can say, well, we're bringing in 25,000 alone in this beginning of the year. And that's true. But we're talking about maybe an increase of like an extra 10% in that case. That will not overburden the system at all. If we were talking about bringing in such an amount that the system was being overburdened by 100% or 200%, that would be concerning. But we're talking about maybe 10%, and that is simply not enough to be anywhere near worked up about. It's also really important to remember that a lot of the financial assistance that people are so worked up over, that refugees are supposedly going to be sucking dry, are very themselves limited. So, for instance, refugees who are privately sponsored here in Canada do not receive any government assistance. All of their financial help has to come from volunteer community sources. So maybe that is a religious affiliation, maybe that's some sort of charity or nonprofit. But if you're getting help, then you can't get help from the government. It's one or the other. And in both cases, it's usually very, very small. The other important thing to remember is that this assistance is temporary. So government-assisted refugees have access to small amounts of money, but that usually will only last for 1 year. And it's usually only in effect as long as the refugee is not working. Now, on the surface, that's a great deal. But if you think about it for a second, it's actually really hard. If you're a new refugee, of course you're new, but if you're a refugee, you're not going to have a lot of the background and, you know, cultural understandings to get great jobs here in Canada. You know, you can't just refugee into Canada and then get a job teaching a university or something. So you have this government assistance for 1 year. That's, you know, that's how much you have it for. If you get a job to help make ends meet, you know, perhaps as like a janitor or, you know, a lower income job, something that you can just, you don't require a lot of education for, or something that doesn't require a lot of responsibility, that sort of thing, you lose your government assistance right away. So you may have gotten that job to like add a bit of extra income to help, you know, feed your family. But once you get that job, you're officially on your own. And again, this is a huge financial burden on the refugee, not on Canada. That's really important to remember. The burden is being shouldered by them. Getting by with a little bit of cash from the government, honestly, that is not a great situation to be in. And you can ask anybody who's ever been on any kind of government welfare that question: would you rather have that welfare or would you rather have a high-paying job? Most people will say they want the high-paying job and not the welfare. Also, if you're a refugee coming into Canada, you will actually owe the government money. And you might say, well, how's that possible? Well, Canada makes you repay them for your transportation fees. So if you are a refugee and you know, get through the UN screening and then you get through the Canadian screening and you're like, yes, I've made it. They're sending a boat. They're taking me over. I'm going to land in Halifax. I'm going to start my new life over again. You're going to get saddled with a bill for your transportation into Canada. So that means you're going to be thousands of dollars in debt as soon as you set foot down on Canada. Additionally, they're going to make you pay for your medical coverage, the medical testing that you go through before you can enter Canada. That is not free. So all of these refugees who come into Canada, they're owing money to the government. So people talking about them not paying taxes, no, they're paying worse. They're in debt. So if anything, they're actually squeezing a bit of extra income out of these people, which is horrible. But if you are desperate for money, you want to see the government get as much money out of them as possible, that's actually a good thing. So again, kind of heartless, but if that's your big concern, don't worry, you're covered. When it comes to the actual healthcare cost per year, interestingly enough, refugees actually use just 10% of what Canadians cost. So you or me, we end up costing the government maybe about $5,000, like an average Canadian, not someone who's sick, will cost the government about $5,000 in healthcare service over the course of a year. A refugee, typically in their first couple of years, will cost a fraction of that. And this is actually a demonstrated, scientifically verified fact. It even has a name, and it's called the healthy immigration effect. So again, part of that is because new refugees, new arrivals, they don't tend to use healthcare services in the same frequency that Canadians will use it. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, there's probably language barriers, there's cultural barriers, all kinds of stuff. And that basically means is that the government spends far less on them in terms of healthcare coverage than an average Canadian. Now, before we go on talking about some of the facts and some of the myths around this refugee crisis here in Canada, let's take a quick commercial break here on The Sector. We will return after these messages from our sponsors.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
Beautiful country. You know, I rode out here about 50 years ago on a little dun horse and started a film career. A picture called The Big Trail. Well, I made quite a few since then. Some good and some bad. Matter of fact, in those days...
CITR!
Matter of fact, they come in pretty handy anytime. It's kind of nice to... know you have something set aside. So if you ever figure on that, remember that
CITR
can be mighty helpful.
Yeah!
We are back here on The Sector with me, Ethan Clow, discussing the nonprofit world with some social justice in there as well, and talking about the refugee crisis here in Canada. What's been going on in the media and some of the misinformation that's been spread around. So hopefully this episode has cleared some of that up for you. And if not, again, check us out online. I'll have some show notes that you can follow up on and, again, get the information for yourself if you don't believe me. And that's a good point. Actually, if those of you who are interested and you want to communicate with me, let me know what you think of the show, or if you have any questions or just any kind of conversation you want to have, feel free to email me at sectorpodcast@gmail.com. I do read all your emails, so I appreciate that, and thank you for your commentary. Additionally, you can find me on Twitter at Ethan Clow. And of course, you can find us online at sectorpodcast.wordpress.com. And if you go there, you can find all of our show notes. And additionally, you can download the podcast, subscribe to it as a variety of different ways. And we'll have links that go back to citr.ca, which also have places where you can download the podcast. So it's one big awesome web ring of information. So go check it out. You'll like it. Anyway, getting back to the crux of the issue here with refugees coming into Canada. Now, I think a really important point, something that we can, I think, end on for this episode, is the notion of what I kind of think of as a bit of an exceptionalism complex. This notion that refugees who are coming into Canada are doing so because they want to take advantage of Canada and Canadians. They want to kind of leech all of the benefits of being in Canada and not contribute to the country as a whole. We've already talked about how, economically speaking, that's nonsense, because refugees end up paying back Canada quite a bit for all the benefit. They do start paying taxes. They don't get very much in terms of government assistance, even though they probably actually should get a bit more assistance. And they don't suck up resources. They actually use less resources than normal Canadians do. In many ways, refugees are kind of a win-win for Canada. Not only do we increase our population and we get more people who are buying things and shopping and using Canadian services, we get more workers, we get people who are educated in different ways, people who have different cultural backgrounds that can enrich the fabric of Canada. You know, classically, you could say people who who come into Canada as refugees, they bring in a cultural identity that we may not be having much of in Canada. And that can have a lot of knock-on effects that are really beneficial. Everything from, like, the mundane to opening new restaurants that have food we've never tried before, but all the way up to giving us perspective on the way the world works in different parts of sort of the social economic status of people around the world. Understanding where important issues are. Understanding what Canadians should be focusing our international efforts on. If refugees are coming into Canada and telling us that our diplomatic efforts are being misplaced, that's valuable intel that we should be reevaluating how we interact with the rest of the world. And that's something that we can learn from our new neighbors. If we treat refugees like they're some kind of plague, we are essentially saying that we're better than them and that we have some sort of exceptional quality that they lack, which is nonsense. Again, it's important to remember there is a side of history that many people don't want to acknowledge, where Canadians, like many other people in the world, said, no, we're special. We're amazing people, and we don't want anyone different coming into our land. And the results were terribly tragic. Canada was implicit in allowing people to die in the Holocaust. We've been implicit in allowing other people to die in other genocides. We've exploited people who've come into our country seeking a better life. If it wasn't for Asian people coming into Canada, Japanese, Chinese people coming into Canada, and being used as essentially disposable workers to build railroads and help industrialize the West, we would not have the society we have today. We owe it to future generations of Canadians to not write a chapter of history that they will be ashamed to read about in the future. And that's something that we all have to take very seriously. We cannot hide behind this notion that here in Canada, we have some amazing, wonderful culture, and that the people who come to Canada are these barbaric, cultureless, evil people. Lest we forget that we've had our own entirely Canadian barbaric cultural practices, to quote a former government here in the country. We allowed some pretty horrible things to happen in this country to people of First Nations descent. We've allowed terrible environmental problems to go on. We've marginalized people. We have shut down and taken away healthcare from many people. A lot of horrible things have happened. We should be grateful that there are people out there who look at Canada and think that we're a haven, a place where they can improve their lives. We don't have a right to sit back and say, no, you don't get to enjoy the same things that we enjoy. That's cruel. And you might think that you're being harsh or that you're showing tough love or something like that, but no, you're just being cruel. And until somebody stands up and says, look, I'm sorry, Grandpa, or I'm sorry, you know, Cousin Bob, or whoever it is that you're arguing with, at a certain point, you have to stand up and say, no, this ideology that you're expressing, this notion, it's rooted in some of the most racist and awful ideologies that come out of the 20th century. And ultimately, if you're going to expose these views and not educate yourself and not look at the facts and do some research that shows what the real reality that refugees face in Canada, then you're being cruel. And you may not think it, and you may not like being called out on it, but at the end of the day, it is your responsibility to educate yourself, and it is your responsibility to learn about the implications of what you're saying. And you don't get to hide behind that notion, by quoting misinformation or saying you're too busy to do research, then close your mouth and stop talking and do research before you open it up and start saying things that have horrible implications. And don't, for the love of all that is holy in the universe, do not refer to these people as vermin. There has been a lot of research, and I'm very serious, both in psychology, sociology, and history, that when you refer to human beings as any kind of vermin, as rats or pestilence or plagues, it dehumanizes them. And it has a very clear knock-on effect on people. It actually makes them more willing to acknowledge them as subhuman and to turn a blind eye to human rights abuses. It really is like a real phenomenon that when you characterize people in that way, you can erode a bubble of empathy around them so that people look at them as viable targets for harassment and viable targets for discrimination. So again, as I said, there is a moral and ethical framework here. And if you decide to fall on the wrong side of it, well, you know, be prepared to be challenged on it. And again, I think if anyone listening knows somebody who is falling on the wrong side of this, you know, at a certain point you have to say to them, look, you know, maybe I love you, maybe you're my best friend, but right now you're espousing a cruel and racist ideology, and you need to know about that. It may not be an easy thing to say to someone, but ultimately it's really important. I think on that note, we will start to wrap things up here on The Sector. Now, as I mentioned before, you can get in contact with us. We are at sectorpodcast@wordpress.com, where you'll find our podcast, our show notes, and all kinds of secondary information about the show. Additionally, you can find us on Twitter, @EthanClough, on Facebook, facebook.com/sectorpodcast. And of course, all of our archives are available at CITR, so CITR.ca, where you can listen live and, again, follow lots of great content from all kinds of student programmers. And it's great. Just check it out. And of course, if you want to email us with your thoughts or your concerns or ideas, whatever, sectorpodcast@gmail.com. Now, in the meantime, as I mentioned many times, we are on a biweekly schedule here for The Sector, so our next episode will be the 11th of December, so well into the final month of the year. Boy, it's gone by fast. Anyway, so that'll be our next show, again, Friday, 8 a.m. You can listen live or, of course, via the podcast. Well, this has been another episode of The Sector, episode 57, for those of you keeping score at home. My name is Ethan Clough, your host, and thank you for tuning in and listening, and I hope you have a fantastic weekend and a fantastic week. See you all in 2 weeks' time. Goodbye.